Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 191, recorded on October 24th, 2013. Enjoy! All right, it's time for We Have Communicators, the show that covers all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me today is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff, how you doing?
I'm doing great, or at least really good, or at least not bad at all.
Cool.
I'm doing great.
That sounds good. I'm glad you're doing great. Ken Ray is also here from macOS Ken and other things. Hey, Ken, how you doing?
One of the things that Jeff said is probably about how I am.
Good. That's kind of a puzzle.
That's how Ken keeps mystery in the relationship.
Yeah.
All of them.
All the relationships.
Right. In all the relationships.
It's been a while. Good to have you back on the show.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. It's fun. When we can do it, it's awesome.
Indeed. You're doing the Star Trek show, right?
I am doing so much stuff right now, it's crazy. Yes, I'm doing the Star Trek show, Mission Log, a Roddenberry Star Trek podcast. I do the Daily Show, macOS Ken, and I just launched something on Newsstand, which I will bore you guys with later.
Okay, sounds good. And, of course, Adam Christensen is also here from the MacCast. Hey, Adam, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, actually. Shocked.
You're shocked?
Yeah, I wasn't sure you were going to introduce me.
No, I have a big list of people that are on the show, because I don't remember.
You clearly didn't have that list last week.
No, I think that we started talking and I thought, I'll let it roll.
I think you didn't have the list.
Okay, you're right. Fine, you caught me. But I have my list this week and there's a lot on it. There's a segue for you. Moving to there was the big announcement on Tuesday and they, like last year, announced everything. And I wanted to touch briefly on the fancy things that we don't usually talk about, which is the Mac stuff, because it's just so darn cool. First, and it actually has implications for iOS stuff. Mavericks is now available. They released it on Tuesday, announced it and released. Ta-da, it's here. And it's free, which is awesome. And I did a thing that I haven't done in many, many years, which is just went and installed it without really caring if it was going to screw up stuff on my computer. Because free is just so tantalizing.
How did it go?
Just fine so far.
Okay.
And I'm guessing that you guys did that too, except for Ken.
No. I actually, rely on my computer to make a living and it can't be broken.
What's that like?
Yeah.
So, I'm in the
exact same place. Everything I do, well, not everything. Most everything I do, though, is tied into one piece of software. And until I hear from somebody that it will not break, Mavericks is like a dream. I'll watch people and, let them tell me how it is.
Let's just say it's a good thing I have a spare laptop.
I do have an extra MacBook Air that I installed it on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's right. I haven't played with it too much.
Fancy like you guys and have more than one computer. No, it's okay.
Yeah, well, Mavericks installed fine on my Air. I mean, not a problem at all. Then I went to install it on my main computer. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that when Mavericks gets to the point where it does the reboot so it can actually start downloading everything to install, it's checking your hard drive and installing at the same time instead of checking your hard drive and then installing. And in my case, it decided that I had some drive corruption that was not repairable and that I would need to reformat my hard drive before I could install Mavericks, which meant that my Mountain Lion installation was trashed.
Oh.
Jeff, you didn't listen to my preparing for Mavericks member show.
Well, I prepared by first making sure I have a good backup. And then by trying it on my backup machine to make sure it would work okay.
Yeah.
And then having a drink.
Yeah.
and then realizing I'm kind of screwed on my main machine, and then seeing this as an opportunity, because I've wanted to upgrade my hard drive to a hybrid drive for a while.
Yeah.
So I just went ahead and bought the hybrid drive, and when it shows up, I'll install Mavericks and then migrate my home directory onto it and call it good.
Yeah, one of my steps is checking your drive before.
Well, here's the interesting thing. Disk Utility did not find any problems with my drive.
Yeah, you got to. Yeah, Disk Utility generally will only find really, really bad stuff.
Well, you'd think that that if I'm in a situation where Mavericks thinks I need to reform my hard drive, would have been really
true.
Bad.
Yeah,
and it actually when it went through the whole drive check for me after it said I was screwed,
mm-hmm.
It goes through everything and says everything's okay. Everything's okay. Gets to the end, tells me everything's okay, and then gives me a dialogue that says that there's damage that can't be repaired and I have to reformat. I'm like, you bitch.
Apple sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, Apple's the worst. What's the show again? Okay, so, and the other super shiny thing that's not iOS related is the Mac Pro. And we already saw a little preview of that already over the summer, but I was mainly intrigued by the video that they posted of them making it. It's a really cool video, especially the very beginning where they take this disc of aluminum and they just stamp it into the shape of the Mac Pro in one just smush, and there it is.
That is kind of crazy. And then also the part where I honestly want one of the ones where they don't make it black. When they have that whole line of like shiny aluminum cylinders.
Silver ones, yeah, those look
cool. I want that like that special edition version, maybe.
That would
and then
cool.
I want it in gold, but they'll be impossible to get, of course.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So,
a lot of robots making Mac Pros.
Yeah, a lot of cool robots. I was playing Keynote Bingo, and that was one of the squares.
Did you see, though, so have you watched the introducing iPad video, the one where Johnny Ive sits there and very, you know, earnestly tells you why this is the really good iPad that you want, not all the other crap ones they made?
Mm-hmm.
They have a robot just for dropping the iPad. Did you see that?
No.
Yeah.
That's hardcore right there.
Yeah, that is. I would imagine it can be made to drop other things too, but I was just like, I was thinking about it, I was like, do they actually have that, or do they just have a guy that does that, you know, normally? But then they're like, we can't just have a guy dropping an iPad for the film. Let's get something fancy. Let's get something fancy. No, in here.
Let's hire C-3PO.
It's about eliminating variables. You got to have a robot so that you can drop it exactly the same way every single time. Right.
I like
my idea better though.
Yeah,
like, you know, they started off. They were going to show how they actually do it. But it's just some guy, $10 an hour, he's just dropping an iPad.
They just have Phil Schiller walk through and trip.
Yeah, I was gonna say it must be Phil, because remember the keynote, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, Steve had Phil jump off of a two or three story height
for the original iBook.
Yeah. To show like, hey, no wires. You know, just the image of Phil's legs kicking in the air as he falls is just...
Wait, wasn't that... That wasn't to show the didn't they have that drive, like, hey, it's going to stop the drive technology? Well, I can't remember.
They were showing off two things. Well, a lot of things. They were showing off...
Oh, no, it was the Wi-Fi. That's right, yeah.
And the Wi-Fi.
The Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
It was a Wi-Fi.
That was the introduction of the airport base station.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. And only Steve could have put that off. Like, okay, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to have Phil get up on this three-story gantry and jump off on stage with an iPad or with an iBook in his hands. If it had been anyone else, he would have said, no, not only no, but hell no. But with Steve Jobs, it's like, okay. And then you go home and you make sure that your will is up to date, and then you go jump off a tower and hope that everything works.
I think Phil's down for anything. He's just the demo man. That's why he's in charge of marketing, right? Because you can ask him to jump off a gantry.
And he'll do it.
He'll totally do it.
Yeah. Okay, so moving on to the fancy iOS stuff. iPads. We got our iPad mini with Retina display. Thank goodness.
Well, we got the promise of the iPad Mini.
Yes. Okay, so there's the promise of it, right. And reports that came out today indicate that the supplies, when it does come out, what was it, like late November, sometime November?
Late November, yeah.
The supplies are supposed to be ridiculously tight.
That's the new standard boilerplate rumor now. So from now, this point forward, anytime a new product comes out, and supplies are going to be really constrained.
Yeah.
Okay. In fairness, though, people have been saying for a long time that supplies were going to be constrained on this. Ming-Chi Kuo actually said that was going to happen. I mean, the question was, are they going to release it, announce it, and not have many to sell, or are they going to build them in bulk? I mean, a whole lot of them. I mean, this actually seems, the fact that they didn't even give an actual date that it's going to be available would seem to indicate that it really is going to be tight. Now, I mean, you know, tight for us as opposed to tight for Apple. You're talking about low millions, probably, as opposed to the tens of millions they might like to pull out everywhere. But, I mean, it really is. I mean, it does sound like it actually is going to be tight. Unlike the touch sensor thing. That was the thing that everybody kept saying. They aren't going to have enough touch sensors for all these phones. And then, of course, they did. That was kind of a different one. But this, it seemed like when it came out with no date at all, that sort of basically buoyed that speculation.
Also, no pre-orders, as far as we know, on the iPad Air.
Yeah. What's that about? Do you think, are there going to be lines for the iPad Air, do you think?
I think not. I mean, there's not a lot of, like, I mean, the processor's new, but I don't see that as being a part that they're having issues with. And so the screen, is it a new, I guess it is a new screen, right? Because they made a big deal about that.
Well, it would be new in the sense that it's thinner and so reworked, but I don't think that it's new really from a consumer perspective.
There were some rumors that it might be the IGZO stuff, but no, we don't know yet.
I don't think so.
I didn't think the part was new either. I mean, but I've heard a couple people say, oh, what might be the newer IGZO technology or whatever. So, so to answer your point, Ken, you know, me personally, I don't think it is going to be constrained because I think, you know, a lot of the parts are the same stuff that they've been using. So, it's really just the new sort of form factor case design that's the biggest update.
Now you're talking about the Air or the Mini? Constraints.
Oh, are we talking about, is the Mini going to be constrained?
Right.
Or, I mean, are there going to be lines for the Mini?
We're talking about the Mini.
No. I think there were two questions there. I was asking, is there going to be a line for the Air?
Right.
And
then sort of the bigger question was, is there going to be a shortage on the Mini? And I think there will be a shortage on the Mini. The reason I'm asking about the line for the Air is purely selfish. I'm going to be out of town. and I'm trying to figure out if I need to go, you know, early to the Apple store where I don't know where it is in the other state that I'm going to be in. Or can I just show up in the middle of the day?
I suffer from launch day paranoia, so I will probably get up early in the morning and go, but I'm not going to like do like I did for the 5S and like check the line the day before. But I'll probably go real early in the morning, just do a drive-by is usually what I do because I don't live too far from an Apple store, luckily. But I don't expect having to get in line. I'm fully expecting you'll be able to walk in on launch day and just buy one.
I hope so. I'm really looking forward to it.
That's what I'm hoping for.
So the big great things for me on the Air, it's thinner and lighter. That I was a little bit disappointed with on the iPad 4, which I bought and had briefly and then decided to return because I got it in like mid-August and I thought, there's going to be a new iPad. I can wait.
and you're right, because it comes out on November 1st.
Right. And I have been waiting thus far, toting around my 17-inch lunch tray MacBook Pro, watching like Breaking Bad while I'm making lunch kind of thing.
You don't have any iPad at all?
No iPad.
Oh, jeez.
I know. First world problems.
God, that's
right,
like
guys?
Stone knives and bear skins.
Yeah. So.
You don't even have like an original iPad, an iPad 2?
Nope.
Do you think he doesn't count those as iPads?
I'm in shock and awe. I had no idea.
Yeah, I've been suffering.
Did you ever own an iPad?
Yes, I've had iPads before.
That's what I thought. Okay, what happened?
What happened? Well, okay, so I had the original iPad, and then I sold it and got the iPad 2. And right. I had that up to the point where the iPad 4s were available for refurb.
Okay, and see, I'm not crazy. I was pretty sure you had an iPad at one point, but you sold it when you got the 4 and then returned the 4.
Right, exactly.
I'm up to speed. I probably knew that, but that was a long time ago. We talked about that, so I just didn't remember.
Yeah, who knows?
Wait a minute. You don't even have an iPad mini? I'm kidding. I'm sorry.
What are you doing on this show, Michael?
Yeah, sorry.
It's called We Have Communicators. You don't even have a communicator.
In fairness, he do have a communicator.
No, I know.
He just doesn't have a pad.
You're ruining the joke.
Wah, wah. So thinner, lighter, doper. I'm most excited about the lightness. It's only 1 pound, and I think they it was like 1.5 for
1.4,
you know, give or take
1.46
was the 4.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, and I thought that was a little heavy compared to the 2, which I think was just grams difference, but I noticed it. So I'm very pleased with that. Now, what was the iPad Mini, the original iPad Mini?
Like 0.75, just under a pound, I think.
Yeah, something like that. So it's pretty close. And we should have gotten Dave Hamilton on because he was actually there. But I believe he said that it was very light and felt great.
Yeah, he said it's deserving of the name Air.
Yeah, well, of course, they call it the iPad Air. It's not the iPad or the iPad with Retina display anymore. It's the iPad Air because it's so featherly light.
Can we do the other reason that it's called the iPad Air?
Why is that?
Well, because there's going to be an iPad Pro.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not a huge fan of just deciding something and like, well, that's the way it's going to be. But name iPad Air does not make any sense unless they're going to differentiate it with another iPad.
Right.
And that doesn't include the iPad Mini because the iPad Mini was already separated out by being Mini.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The question is the iPad Pro going to be bigger or is it going to come with peripherals or what's going to make it so pro?
I think it'll be bigger. I think some of these rumors we're hearing about them testing, you know, 11, 13-inch iPads are probably, that's the pro model.
And, you know,
it's not just size, though, that makes it pro.
No, it'll be more than that. But I think the idea is that here's an iPad that for a lot of people who do certain kinds of content creation sorts of things, I'm thinking things like writing, people who are using, say, an 11-inch MacBook Air right now, I can see those kinds of tasks and that kind of productivity moving to an iPad Pro.
Do you think an iPad Pro is going to have a kickstand?
Get out.
I think it might have some sort of cool keyboard accessory.
Yeah, there were rumors to that effect leading up to the announcement.
Yeah.
And I was certain those were all fake.
Well, I mean, there's no question that Apple is working on something like that because Apple's working on everything.
Right.
But yeah, the idea that was going to come out, the idea that Apple had named their event after the fact that they were going to come out with a new cover was silly, especially where Microsoft has like just been whooping it up about their cover. There's no way Apple's going to have an event that's all about a typing cover when Microsoft introduced that a year ago.
And I say the keyboard accessory thing with a lot of trepidation because I think, you know, the current thinking at Apple is that, you know, putting a keyboard on a tablet is silly because you're trying to make it into something that it's not. So there would have to be, it's going to have to be something, you know, more well thought out than that. I don't know that it's just, you know, slap a keyboard cover like we can buy now through a third party onto an iPad.
Right. And, you know, I think that's the thing. That's where, that's what Apple has been relying on for so long with the iPad, and it's worked well for them. They sell the iPad in a configuration that works well for a majority of the consumers who want an iPad, but at the same time, third parties fill in those gaps with the abilities that the iPad has with things like keyboard cases and so on. And we kind of saw that in that video that they played at the keynote about how versatile the iPad can be. So I don't think they're going to really focus too heavily on that. Although making those sorts of accessories maybe a little more visible in the store, I haven't really poked around because I haven't had a desire to get a keyboard case or anything like that for my iPad, but I know plenty of people who have them. So I don't think it's something Apple wants to worry about too much.
So, yeah, I agree. I don't think keyboards are a major focus for Apple.
Yeah.
Okay, but here's the thing. Okay, let me back up. Should we even, maybe I've just been thinking about it too much for the past couple of days, should we accept the idea of an iPad Pro?
I think so.
Okay. Well, then it's got to have a keyboard, but maybe not a keyboard. There was an idea right. a long time ago. What was that? The Courier from Microsoft.
Right.
I remember August Trometer and I talking about this before the Courier was even announced at one point. He was like, what if you could take, instead of having, when we didn't know, when I was still calling the iPad the Mac tablet netbook thingy because we didn't know what it was going to be exactly, the idea that August liked was a bigger iPhone, but rather than having just a bigger iPhone as a tablet, two of them and hinging them, which is, of course, what the Courier was theoretically supposed to be.
Oh, yeah.
If you could hinge like an iPad with another iPad, so then you can turn one part of it into a keyboard, like an actual keyboard, it's still going to be touch, which is still going to like freak a lot of people out. But if you give them more of that form factor, but then have it be something, I don't know. It's a fun thing to think about because it beats thinking about the television, that's for sure.
This is an idea that I have thought about for a long time. And before the iPad ever came out, like years ago, when we started seeing a lot of these touch patents appearing that ultimately became the iPad, I was thinking Apple was considering replacing the keyboard and trackpad on the MacBook Pro with a multi-touch display. And so then the whole keyboard becomes whatever type of interface you need for whatever it is you're working on.
Right.
And of course, that never happened. But I've still thought maybe that's something they could do with a Pro iPad, which would be a lot like the Courier thing that you're talking about. So I'm totally with you.
Yeah, well, that'd be fun.
I mean, think of something like, there's all kinds of technology out there that hasn't been explored. You could do some interesting things maybe with a cover with an e-ink style display with a touch layer over top of it. Sure. So now imagine you can have software that then changes the interface of that keyboard to be something more specific. You know, Microsoft's playing around with this with their new Surface. What do they call those extra click-on keyboards they have now, right? They have one for like doing music, changing it into music controls and things like that. So I think if you get something that was really thin and light, like a cover, but then be able to have it dynamically changed in software, I mean, there's some cool stuff you could do if you're doing a Pro sort of thing. So I don't know if it needs to be like two iPads sandwiched together necessarily. That secondary display could be a secondary thing to hold palettes and things that maybe don't need as high resolution as a Retina, say.
Yeah, but would you want something that's not as high resolution? I get what you're saying.
Yeah, you could make it thinner and you could make it more energy efficient. I mean, because you're going to have challenges if you're doing multiple high res. Displays, you've got to have extra processors, you've got to have, so does it really need all the full functionality of the main screen?
Oh, I don't know. It'd be fun.
It would be fun.
It'd be fantastic. It'd be, because then you could just, flip it over and have
but
two
if you had
iPad,
to do it and have half the battery life, or I guess you'd have two batteries, but then you got weight. there's lots of things to go in. But this is the exact point. This is the exploration that Apple's going through, I think, why we don't have a Pro yet is because there's a lot of things to sort of explore and think about, and that's what Apple does.
Yeah. Well, I think what you guys are primarily talking about is input devices and primarily keyboard. And keyboard has always been, and keyboard is the hardware extension of language input. And the language input has always been the most tedious aspect of everything with the touch interfaces. Even though the keyboard on the screen works really well, I think many would say that it still is a little bit more comfortable for taking notes or doing a lot of text input to use a hard keyboard, or at least something that is a little bit more suited to using both hands.
Yeah, we'll get past that though at some point, won't we?
Yeah,
I mean, basically, we just have to die.
Yeah, that's probably what it is. Right.
And then kids will come up who have only been there's the story that somebody is telling right now. So my fiance, maybe wife by the time people hear this, who knows, keeps telling the story, and she just thinks it's tragic. Oh, it's just terrible. She was someplace, and there was a two-year-old, and somebody put a magazine down in front of the two-year-old, and the two-year-old started trying to swipe the picture on the magazine. Oh, and it's dreadful. And there's nothing dreadful about that. It's just the two-year-old knows how to use an iPad. I mean, the two-year-old is already sort of moving on to that next thing. So we're more comfortable right now with touch keys because that's what we grew up with. And there were people, you know, before us who were like, ah, give me a pen. You know, I mean,
right,
this idea that it's always going to be this way. It was really interesting. The guy from Microsoft who took a shot at the fact that Apple is releasing iWork. No, can't remember his name. Last name is Shaw, I believe.
Oh, right. Yeah.
VP of something at Microsoft came out and said, look, nobody knows work the way we know work because we revolutionized the way people work by giving them a low-cost thing that they could use to do blah, blah, blah. Well, I mean, they also retarded the development of technology and of productivity for years by making sure that the computer that they released in 1995 would still be able to run the software they were going to release in 2003. I mean, to say, you know, we made this happen. Well, you did make it happen, but you also stopped it from happening in a lot of ways. And so now, as we get more touch-enabled stuff, and certainly, I mean, Siri is going to be part of this too someday, or something like Siri is going to be part of this someday. We're coming up with new ways of input. And either you and I are going to have to get over our fetish for the keyboard, the physical keyboard, or, you know, our kids and grandkids will be the ones who are saying, man, can you believe they used to use physical keys to do this? It's so cumbersome.
Yeah. You know, I was just going to comment two things on that. I mean, I'm getting more and more comfortable with using a voice as an input thing. I'm finding myself, and maybe it's because I've sort of forced myself to use Siri, and I think I'm one of the few people who really loves Siri and uses it all the time.
No, I enjoy it too. So there's two of us.
But I use it a lot. I use it a lot. And when I talk to people, they're like, eh, Siri, I tried it once and forget it. I'm like, you really just have to kind of use it. And the more you use it, the more comfortable you get with it and the more efficient and effective it becomes as a tool. And I'm starting to do the same thing with dictation. I haven't quite moved to it as much on my Mac, but as input for especially my iPhone, I'm almost exclusively using the dictation button now. I very rarely type anything out on the keyboard if I can avoid it. So if I'm in a situation where I can hold the phone up to my ear and just talk into it, or, you know, if I'm alone and I can talk into it, that's fine. And, you know, public, I'm still using the keyboard. But there's that.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to comment on Ken's point about, you know, sort of this, you know, we just have to die sort of thing, or it's the next generation that's going to get comfortable with this. Some of those things that you were saying made me think of the ideas that Apple's putting forth in the new ad for the iPads, the Pencil ad, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They're mm-hmm. doing that same play, right? Here's the Pencil, here's the tool that we all use, and then it turns out, no, it's, you know, it's the iPad, it's the next thing.
Yeah.
Replacing the Pencil.
Yeah, I like that ad quite a bit. But I really like the one too, the film that they did, the Life on iPad.
Mm-hmm.
It scares me. There's so many things in it that scare me, but that last shot of the guy hanging off the side of a mountain.
Yeah.
But the iPad is really, it was really a dazzling
dude's got a tweet.
Yep.
Exactly.
Dude's got a tweet.
LOL, I'm on the side of a mountain, OMG.
Click. Well, you know, I think that we also saw in that particular video, we saw the Apple sort of embracing what we've kind of referred to as being a dorky thing that people do with their iPads, taking photos with it out in public. And when the iPad first came out, I mean, that was like, oh, what are you doing with that iPad, taking pictures? You look like a dork. And slowly but surely, that has become totally acceptable. And I was in DC last month. People were all over with iPads taking photos, including my girlfriend. She had taken her iPad with her in her purse. I didn't even realize it, but she took it out at some point, was taking pictures of the Lincoln Memorial and all that stuff. And we see that in the video happening. And I think that's a really good example of how Certain technologies just take a little bit of time to get used to, and the idea of talking to your phone or what have you to make things happen in public will become less stigmatized as time goes on. And of course, referring back to the show name, if you look at Star Trek, it's just the thing that they do. Oh, you know, computer, do this, give me this. And yeah. It's not a big deal.
And it never feels awkward, right? I mean, when you're watching the show, you don't think that's really bizarre.
Right. Exactly.
Well, they're all talking to one big computer, though. That's the thing. I mean, what they're not doing on Star Trek is each walking around with their own personal computer that they're all talking to. Right. Yeah, I mean, you never, and they also do address it, you know, computer, this. It's never, I need this. What? Oh, no, I'm sorry. I was talking to the computer. You know?
It'll but, get
yeah,
there.
You're right. It's, it'll be exciting when it's more. The only question is, how do you do that and not be a dick in public? You know what I mean?
Again, like I use the race to talk feature. Oh, okay.
Yeah, race to talk is good.
So most people think that you're just being a jerk and talking on your phone, which is somehow quasi acceptable in our current society.
And being a total jerk because you're just like, tell me the population of China.
No, tell me.
Right, exactly. No, you got it wrong. Wow, I don't want to be that guy's assistant. He's mean. No, I'm just talking to Siri. Oh, I tried Siri once. Sucks. Okay. It sucks. It takes us back to the beginning of the Siri conversation. Sorry.
Yeah. I like Siri. I think she's gotten better with iOS 7, although I have noticed that thing that you guys were talking about where every once in a while she'll say, I'm sorry, I can't do that for you right now.
That happens way too frequently. Apple needs to get that fixed.
Yeah.
So I must be kind of unique in that sense because I'm not really experiencing that hardly ever.
It's because you're so nice
Boulder.
To her.
You're the only person in Boulder using it.
Actually, okay, that's very possible.
it would be about data, wouldn't it? Because it doesn't happen to me very often. But when it does, is that what it's about?
I have no idea what causes it.
I think right. So. I think it would be. But yeah, okay, so moving on, and speaking of the future, actually, we have to talk about our sponsor this week, which is Transporter. Speaking of Star Trek, right? So if you don't know what the Transporter is, it's from a company, Connected Data, and it's this little device that you hook up to your network, and you can plug in a drive. You can either get it bare without a drive, or you can get it with a 1 or 2 terabyte drive. And what happens is this becomes your personal cloud. And by that, I mean, it's something that's always available, assuming your internet is always available. And you can put whatever stuff you want on it. And you can have many folders on there, and each folder can have different uses. So one folder can be, all the movies that you want to, or all the media, I should say, that you want to have access to all the time. On the go, but you don't want to store on your iDevices, let's say. So you just put all that stuff on there, and then with the iOS app, the Transporter app, you can have access to all that stuff on the iPad and the iPhone. You can do collaboration stuff with it. It's very similar to Dropbox on that front, in that you can either share with someone who doesn't have one of these devices. You put whatever documents or whatever in the folder, share it with the person, they download the software on their computer, and then they have access to all of it. And because your device is always online, they can grab it whenever they want to. You don't have to worry about your computer being on. And then you can share your files back and forth. Now, when it gets cool is when you have more than one. So you have one, and then your buddy has one. And when you share stuff between them, it mirrors that stuff back and forth. So you can collaborate in that way. And it actually becomes much faster when you do that because you don't have to go out to the internet and get that stuff. And of course, you don't have to worry about networking or getting the right IP address or firewalls or any of that stuff, because what you do is you have an account through Connected Data that simply bridges the gap between the two devices. And they don't have any access to your data. That's one of the things that they really like to express to everyone, is that unlike Dropbox, you're not putting all of your stuff on some random server out in the cloud. It's actually at your house and you have full control over it. So you can upgrade it, you can take it offline, whatever you want to do with it. And so it's secure in that way. Now, if you want to get the transporter, it's at filetransporter.com. You can use the code WHC50 for $50 off, which is awesome. It's $200 for the Bear drive. Is that right? It's 200, not 100.
199, yeah.
Yeah.
200, yeah. So 199, you get $50 off for the Bear device, and you can put whatever drive you want in there. It's totally screwless, so it's really cool. You just twist and pop it off, and then there's a little drive carrier. You just slap your your laptop drive in there, whatever you want, put it in, turn it on, and you're going. So it's the transporter. You can get $50 off WHC50. You can get the 1 terabyte or 2 terabyte as well if you don't want to have the drive separate. You just want to get it and go. Go to filetransporter.com. Oh, there's a dog. And I think Adam muted himself.
Or maybe no, that wasn't me.
That was Ken.
I'm sorry, I got to step away for a second.
That's forgive okay.
me. I'll be right back.
So yeah, it's filetransporter.com. Check them out. We appreciate their sponsorship of We Have Communicators. And with that, I guess we did cover the iPads, which we didn't really mention the fact that the iPad Mini and the iPad Air seem to have the exact same internals.
Yeah, the only difference, as far as I can tell, is the screen size.
That was a huge part of the announcement, was and shocking to me, because I did not see that coming at all. I wasn't entirely sure either of the iPads was actually going to have an A7 processor, to be honest, and the M7 coprocessor.
Yep.
So now Apple has standardized the processor across iOS devices, which is huge. It makes it really easy for them in terms of apps and stuff like that. You know, if you're going to optimize your app for the latest and greatest processor, you know that all of the new iPads and the iPhone is going to support that.
Yeah, that is really cool. We also didn't mention that. So the new iPad is $400, and that's for the 16 gig. They added a 128 gig model. But they also are keeping the iPad Mini, the original, around, because they can price it more cheaply at $329 as it was before. Now, can you get a bigger size than the baseline for the original Mini?
No, it's always only the 16 for the base model. They're also keeping around the 16 gigabyte iPad 2,
yep,
which you can buy for, you know, $400.
Is it $400?
Yeah, what the crud?
Wow.
Okay, I have a theory on that, because clearly I'm all about theories the past couple days. And my theory is they're selling it at $400 to the general market, but they will have a sharply discounted price in the educational market.
Well, and I don't think it's just I don't even think it's just education. I think it's education, I think it's corporate, and I think it's government.
Yeah, institution.
Yeah. Mm. And the reason is those guys are heavily invested in secondary infrastructures to support those devices, meaning the 30-pin dock connector. You've got charging carts, you've got all kinds of specialized accessories. Say if you're in the medical field, they've got, you know, medical devices that they use and they connect to those things. You've got docking stations and all that stuff. You know, so you have that in corporate IT, you have that in education, you have that in... So they needed to keep the 30-pin connector. What had confused me until I was on MacBreak this week, and Renee Ritchie from iMore pointed this out, what confused me was, why wouldn't they go with the iPad 3, which still has a 30-pin dock connector? But the difference there was that was when they added the Retina screen. Right. And actually, performance-wise, it's a little bit slower than the iPad 2 because of the Retina stuff.
Yep.
So if you benchmark the two side by side, it actually, you get better performance out of the iPad 2. So, and you know, you don't get the Retina screen, but I guess if you're buying the you know, the cheaper iPad, then maybe that's not such a big deal.
Yeah. Well, for me, the iPad 2 was still pretty capable when I got rid of it, so it's still a good device. Now, they also announced...
I've never had issues with the 3. That's the funny thing is, you know, people say, well, the iPad 3 was a dog. It's like, I've had the iPad 3, and I've never really noticed it, but maybe...
Mine has always been a great little thing.
Yeah.
Which do you have? I'm sorry, Jeff, the 2 or the 3?
I have the 3.
Okay.
And I have the 2. Happy with it.
I'm very much looking forward to the new one. And the 2 has been great. It's a great machine, but I'm looking forward to it being speedier, and I don't have the Retina display up because I have the 2.
I don't know if you caught us, Ken, but we were just talking about Apple keeping the 2 around as the entry level.
Yeah.
iPad.
Yeah, no, I was here for that part. Yeah.
It seemed odd to me.
Well, I saw a report saying I don't know who particularly was being quoted there, but it boils down to why is Apple keeping it around? And it's simply because people are still buying them.
I saw that. Why is Apple selling the $399 iPad? Because they can.
Because they can. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
This is the weird thing when you're like that thing's 3 generations old.
Can we actually point. why are they keeping the 13-inch non-Retina MacBook Pro? That's the one I don't understand, because it's only $100 less.
They did
optical
keep that,
drive.
That one?
Yeah. Oh, the optical drive, is that it?
The Retina MacBook Pros don't have. Oh, right, the non one does.
The non one is the only computer Apple sells with an optical drive now.
Holy cow.
The only.
Huh. Well, why did they
only get, computer,
right.
You're right.
Why did they get rid of the 15-inch? That's,
wait, just the Mac.
That's irritating.
Mac Mini still has an optical drive, right?
Nope.
Oh.
But yeah. you can still buy the add-on if you need it or want it.
Yeah, the $79 USB super drive. Yeah.
Nobody's ripping their CDs anymore, are they? People stopped doing that in like 2003. Was I the last guy borrowing CDs from people? I mean, buying CDs places and ripping them?
No, I think it was just me and you. That was it.
All right. Huh.
Good times.
Yeah.
Yep.
I was disappointed they got rid of the 15-inch MacBook Pro. That I don't
the
understand
why
they did
one?
That. Yeah, the non-Retina. Is that because the Retina is now priced at what it was before? I don't remember what it was.
Yeah, but they dropped the price $200.
You don't get the storage. I mean, that was the only reason for me. You know, the price for storage was the big deal.
Well, you could get, the price for storage, you get an optical drive, and you can get a matte display. Although the glossy displays now are much better than they once were in terms of less reflectivity.
Yeah.
Isn't that sort of like saying, well, you know, at least the herpes she has isn't quite as bad as the other?
Yeah, I know.
I was wondering that, not about herpes, because I hear it's just as bad. Are we just used to the glossy screen, or do you really think it has gotten that much better as far as reflectiveness?
It definitely has gotten better. I looked at it in the Apple Store at some point, but at the same time, I would guess that it's a technical thing for Apple that it's easier for them to do the glossy displays, at least on the iOS devices.
Yeah.
Jeff, you may have something to say about it because you're the print and photo and whatever guy.
Yeah, well, it's clear that Apple didn't care to cater to the creative professional market anymore when they went to glossy displays.
Okay, I have a question for you though. I mean, if we're really being honest, if I'm a creative pro, right, and I'm doing color work, I probably most likely have a second monitor, right?
Right, but what if you're a creative pro that needs to be doing work when you're outside of your office?
Mobile.
And I realize what I just
then you're
said.
In an uncontrolled
because,
environment, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
so everything's thrown out the window anyway.
But if you, that's totally true. I realized what I was saying as I said it. But if you're sitting in your office in a controlled environment and you have a calibrated external display and the very blue, because Apple's displays are really blue shifted, mm-hmm. display on your laptop right beside it, I mean, that looks like ass. It's so much better if you can have both your displays calibrated, especially if you need to have images like on two displays at the same time. You're comparing two web browsers and stuff like that.
But I'm just wondering, in typical Apple fashion, where they kind of looked at the marketplace and went, you know, really, this is such an edge case, and, you know, we've got to have all this extra, you know, buy options and stock extra parts and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, you know, because the graphic design market is such an edge case. Well, from Apple's perspective, I'm sure it is.
I mean, at this point, to a certain degree, I hate to say it, but it probably is. They sell a lot to graphics professionals, but I mean, those guys will deal with it, you know, and you've got a lot more consumers out there probably demanding the glossy displays. I mean, their consumer numbers in the laptop space have gone up since they have the halo effect of iPads and iPhones and stuff like that. I mean, Apple has been selling more Macs than they ever have, and I think it's to a broader, more diverse marketplace than they ever have had in a long time.
What was the point of going with glossy display, though?
Because it looks really good for the consumer market. You can make movies look really pretty on
photos look really nice on iPhoto.
Even though the colors are completely wrong, it looks really nice.
Consumers like bright, saturated stuff. I mean, you look at inkjet printers, they print out horrible pictures, and they're all skewed when you get them out of the box to just be vibrant and bright and, you know, for two reasons. One, consumers like it, and two, it makes use lots of ink, which means more money for the printing companies.
Wait, go back for a second, though. I mean, you're saying consumers like glossy screens, but consumers like Macs, and then the Mac went with the glossy screen, and now consumers like glossy screens and other computer makers as well. But I don't think anybody was clamoring for a glossy screen. In fact, most people who are using their computer on a regular basis, most people who are using Macs on a regular basis that I know anyway, not even professional types, just, you know, people who use a Mac, hate the glossy screen. Because, you know, if they're sitting at Starbucks, where they used to sit at Starbucks, used to be fine because the sun came in from outside, it was okay because your, you know, screen could power through. And now all you can see is you staring back at your computer, right? I mean, consumers weren't like, oh, got to have one of those. It's just what came with a Mac.
Yeah.
Right? Mm. And now it's sort of an expectation, I think. But it wasn't, this was not a consumer-driven movement. This was an Apple-driven movement on the Mac.
Well, it was a PC-driven movement that made its way over to Mac.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was it really? Because the last PC I had one of those thin, filmy
PCs had screens. Glossy screens. It was actually a complaint a lot of PC switchers would levy against Macs.
Well, really?
Have a gloss? Yes.
Wow.
I heard it all the time.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Talking switchers.
It drove
two people who wanted to switch, and they would be like, well, they don't have any glossy screens. And I really like the glossy screen on my HP. And I would always have, and I only know because I'd have the argument with them. I was like, do you know that the colors on that screen are just whacked? But they're like, my HD movies look really awesome. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so
Blacks are all washed out on Macs. You know, the blacks are gray. They're not black.
No, they're actually really black. But you don't understand, and this is why there's so many non-designers in dumpsters right now, and I've said too much.
The other thing I wanted to comment on real quick, Ken, because you had asked the reason for the 13-inch MacBook Pro, because I hadn't gone to look at the non-Retina one. For me, hard disk space is the big deal. So that 13-inch has a 500 gig hard drive at that price. To get the same thing in a 13-inch Retina, you got to jump all the way up to $1,800.
Oh, okay.
To get 512 of storage. So, I mean, there are still some people that where storage is a bigger deal than a Retina display, I think.
Right.
All right. So let's circle back to iPad stuff, because T-Mobile announced a really cool deal today, or I guess it was Tuesday. Mm-hmm. I missed it. So for cellular iPads, if you buy a cellular iPad from T-Mobile, you'll get 200 megabytes of data free every month. That was number one. And number two, even cooler, you can get an iPad Air, a 16 gig iPad Air or the Mini, For $0 down, and you're going to pay for the Air $26.25 per month, for the Mini $22, and the older Mini $17.91. And then as you go up, you're going to throw down $100, $200 for increase in size. And I mean, that is really making me think I should get a cellular iPad and do it with T-Mobile. I know I'm paying the same amount.
That you just said it. I had seen this. It's funny, as I'd seen this story and I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. And I hadn't given it much thought. But now as you're reading it out, I'm going, I need to do the math now, though. How much do you end up in the end paying? Because you got to pay for, you still pay that for what, 2 years?
Yeah, 24 month. And you end up paying the exact same amount that you would. So you're just deferring the amount. So they're loaning you money.
So they're taking zero interest?
Yes.
So this is like zero interest loan?
Yeah.
It's like what they're doing with the iPhone.
Oh. They don't charge you just a little bit more for that privilege?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Well, it seems crazy to me for the iPad. I get it with the phones because they're getting the monthly subscription fee.
Right.
But if they give me 200 megabytes of free data every month.
Well, right? 200 megabytes.
Right, Michael, you don't have to have a data plan with T-Mobile. You're just buying the iPad from T-Mobile.
You have to have an active account, an active data account with them. But I think what they're counting on, and what Ken was probably about to say, is that 200 megabytes is not a whole lot. And so they're banking on the fact that you're going to want more data.
Sure.
And you can do month to month. You can say, this month I want this amount of data. And I think you can even do like weekends and that sort of thing. You can say, this weekend I want, you know, a little bit more data because I'm going to be going crazy on Netflix or whatever. Now, to me, I just think that deferring the payment on it is enough to go with T-Mobile, and the added benefit of getting the GPS and the occasional cellular network access. That sounds pretty
good.
Yeah, great.
That's what I'm thinking. That's why, as you're saying it, I'm like, why wouldn't you do that? Especially for someone like me. I buy Wi-Fi iPads normally, and I use my AT&T tethering.
Right.
To
yeah,
get
me too.
The data access that I want. So I'll still have that. So I don't have to worry about going over. And if there's no penalty, if there's no, you know, extra surcharge in terms of I'm just, you know, spreading out the payments, that doesn't really bother me all that much.
Yeah.
I hate there's something about, I'm used to it with my phone, and I understand what you're saying. And, you know, paying $24 a month and having the access to the, you know, to the cellular, all that sort of makes sense. There's some way that I'm to continuing to pay for a tablet. I think it's the whole thing of I'm committing to this iPad for 2 years. Now, granted, I've had the iPad that I have now for 2.5 years. And yeah, I imagine that the next iPad I get, I will have for at least a couple of years. But the idea that I'm locking myself into it, that if I decide to come out with an iPad Pro, let's say, and I go nuts, I'm like, I have to have the iPad Pro, I'm still paying for the other iPad.
Well, you can pay off the iPad.
Yeah, you can pay it off.
That was the other thing I was going to ask. So can I go in, sign up for the plan, and then just send them a big check for the first month and be done?
Yeah,
yes. You can.
Well, I guess I still just want to buy it outright. I want to be able to throw it in the river if I want to and not have to
answer. But then you don't get,
anybody.
I mean, but see, the thing is this, what I'm hearing here is, I mean, if you're smart about this and you do it this way, you now have an iPad for the same price that you'd buy it from the Apple store, but you get 200 megabytes of free data every month just for nothing.
Yeah.
Right.
That sounds like a deal to me.
Yeah, it's a pretty good deal.
I don't know. I'm looking for the downside. Somebody tell me where there's got to be a downside, right?
Well, it's the fact that if you're one of those people like you and me who usually go with the Wi-Fi, you are ending up paying another $130.
Yeah. I mean, that's one.
So. Yeah, but I mean, that can be made up in a lot of ways. I mean, when I go to sell it again, it's worth more.
Yep, that's true.
Right, right.
You know, so there's a lot of benefit to that I've just been passing up just because I didn't want to pay for another data plan was the main reason. It wasn't as much as I didn't want a cellular capable thing. It's just I knew I wasn't going to pay for the data plan, so why pay to even have the antenna stuff in there? But yeah. And like you said, too, you also get the GPS, which is kind of nice for directions and other sorts of things.
And I'm also thinking about switching to T-Mobile with my next iPhone, so it'll be a nice test of the network. So, yeah. I think it's a cool deal, so it's definitely worth checking out. Now, I don't know if you can... I would imagine you can't do this at the Apple Store. You'd probably have to go to T-Mobile Direct to get that deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if you do get a T-Mobile iPad from the Apple Store, you'll still get the 200 megabytes per month deal that they have. You're just not getting the deferred payment deal.
That might even be better.
So just for choosing T-Mobile, they're going to give you the 200 megabytes.
Yep.
Well, that's very nice of them.
That is very nice of them. Well, again, it's just like it's nice of the guy on the corner who's like, no, seriously, take it. It's free.
Yeah, because they know you're going to probably go over at some point and then they'll automatically charge your card.
Right. Which is great, though. I mean, if you're going to do that. I mean, the thing is, I guess the other reason I'm not terribly interested is because when the first iPad came out, I bought the 3G, the AT&T 3G model, and I think I used it once in that year. I used the 3G.
The same thing.
And so it wasn't worth $130.
Yeah.
Now, Susan, on the other hand, constantly using the 3G on her iPad. So, I mean, I guess it depends on how you use it and where you use it, but it's like I always say, I'm afraid to be places that don't have Wi-Fi. So, you know,
I understand completely.
Yeah.
I still don't think I'm going to go for the 3G.
Yeah. Okay. So
or 4G.
Speaking of free, Apple, we talked about Mavericks, that was free. iWork and iLife are now free for on iOS devices and on Macs for new devices. As reported on the Mac Observer, I should say. I don't know what I was responsible for, but I wrote something about it. The
awesome thing is you don't remember what you wrote.
I know what I wrote. It was about Aperture. Okay. Come on. I'm just not going to say that I wrote every article because I didn't. But so on iOS devices, as it was, I think, a month ago, I guess it was for iOS 7 and on, if you had a new iOS device, you could get everything but GarageBand in the iOS iLife suite for free. And it's still that same thing, right? You still have to have a new device to get all the iLife stuff for free on your iOS?
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
iWork, same deal, which is awesome. And I love that Apple is going with going this direction because they've always been sort of doing that with Macs. They kind of dropped the ball on that with iOS devices when they started doing iWork and the iLife stuff for iOS.
iWork was never free on the Mac, though.
No, it wasn't.
That's true. But it came with a trial. But yeah, you're right. It wasn't free. But I love that it is free now. We talked about the guy from Microsoft who was saying, he essentially said it was not worth it, the iWork and the iLife. Like, clearly it's free and you get what you pay for and that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's always been an afterthought, and that it was, I can't remember, it was not struggling, it wasn't also ran, but it was basically that kind of thing, was what he was saying. But, I mean,
they couldn't compete with Office, so they had to make it free.
Right. Yeah,
kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
And then also saying, I saw him on Twitter. He was actually engaging, might be overstating it a tiny bit, but he was going back and forth with a few people Twitter about, he also mentioned that there were plenty of other free productivity suites out there, which is not a defense of Microsoft at all. It's just sort of something offensive to say, or I guess something that he perceives as offensive to say about. Yeah, iWork.
Now,
based
on that logic, shouldn't Microsoft give away the Surface for free?
There you go. And just charge for Office on it.
I thought it was really it struck me as a bad idea for him to make to Microsoft corporate blog to do that. I said on macOS Ken was, it's hard to know whether or not Apple making the iWork changes will hurt Microsoft's business, but it's definitely gotten under somebody's skin. Could you go that day really and say, so what? You're an idiot. I'm sorry, I shouldn't call the man an idiot, but that's such a bad PR move. It's insane, because then the news is, wow, look, they poked the bear. You know what I mean? It's about the fact, you're still talking about the fact that Apple did what Apple did. If anybody reports on the fact that the guy from Microsoft said anything, they're not going to report, well, Microsoft is still a superior product. They're going to say, wow, look, they sort of pissed off the Microsoft guy, huh? Look what Apple did with their thing. Now they got that guy worried, even if he's saying he's not.
Mm-hmm.
The comment I had about this free stuff is the same comment, and I often feel that I'm a lone voice out there, and maybe I'm crazy and the only one who's concerned about this, but I said, you know, I love the fact that all this stuff is free. I agree with you, Michael. As a consumer, it's awesome. For Apple, I think it's awesome because when you get your device out of the box, you've got all this great software that runs on it. It makes consumers happier. I've got, you know, a full Office suite I didn't have to pay for. But at the same time, I have to wonder if it's not concerning for developers in general. And it's because of this whole app ecosystem, what I'm calling sort of the new app world order, which is consumers getting the impression that quality software, the price of it and the value of quality software is free. And it should be free. And
well, some consumers will see that.
Lot of consumers are, though. And it's the same mentality that I've felt. And again, maybe I'm more sensitive to it because I'm a podcaster and I'm somebody who produces content on the internet. But if you produce content on the internet, I don't care if it's a blog or music or whatever it is, there's also a perception that, well, the internet's free. The content and all that stuff should be free. So, you know, and again, going to the earlier conversation, maybe it's just an old fogey mentality. You know, it's like, well, it's a new generation, and the new generation is going to figure out the new models and the new ecosystem. That's why I'm calling it, you know, this is a new way of doing things. I'm just saying it concerns me, and I kind of don't, in some ways, don't like it. I don't think it's all positive, and there's a lot of people that seem to be putting this is great, this is wonderful, this is, you know, this is the future, this is the panacea of delivering and selling software, and I'm not sure I'm convinced.
Well, from Apple's standpoint, I think this is a really, really smart move, regardless of what it does to developers. This goes back to the early days of the Mac, the beginning of the Mac, when you'd buy a Mac and every application you needed to actually use the computer to its fullest potential was included in the box. And then if you needed to, just said to its fullest potential, if you need to use it beyond its fullest potential, which would be more full, then there are all the other applications that you could purchase. But you take that all-in-one Mac out of the box, set it up, and you had your spreadsheets and your word processors, your drawing programs, and everything was there. And that's what I think Apple is doing now with the Mac and with the iPhone and the iPad. Buy the new device, you get all of these apps for free with it, and now you have a fully functional productivity and entertainment device without spending more money than it costs just to buy the device. Yeah. And that's really smart for Apple. Now, for developers, that means they have to find ways to really differentiate what it is that they do, or they're targeting markets that are beyond what Apple is addressing with their all-in-one package.
Yeah. Here's the thing that I said, though, and again, it may just be because we're so early in this transition, and this is just the process that we go through when there's major shifts in a marketplace like this. But my concern is that to date, what I've seen to deal with this from a lot of developers in terms of finding a new model, the models I'm seeing emerge are ad-supported, right? Which is fine, but the ads seem to be getting more and more aggressive. And we're seeing interstitial kind of stuff and really annoying because people don't click on those things. We're seeing the freemium model, but I'm seeing the freemium model move to more and more the I'm going to berate you till you give me some money model with a lot of developers. And then the last one that we see is the sort of what I call the Adobe Microsoft method, which is, well, we're going to go to a subscription and you're just going to pay us every year for the rest of your life so that we can actually make money off this stuff. So those seem to be the three models that are being put forth in this new order. And that's the thing that I'm responding to, saying, I would rather just, can I just pay you for the good software? and just have you make a living and have you make good stuff. So
it doesn't feel to me, though, like that's necessarily, I don't feel like the moves that Apple made this week are necessarily part of that.
Yeah.
And maybe, hang on.
Yeah.
People buy a computer. Most people who buy a computer at this point, right, it's, well, my kid's going off to college, or, well, I have to have this for my job or something like that. And so there are things that they're going to need with that computer, including the word processing and maybe something like Keynote or maybe something like Numbers or, mm-hmm. or you know, things that they're going to have, right? And from a consumer standpoint, it is a crappy experience to say, all right, here's a computer, $1,200. Excellent, it's $1,200. Now I can write my paper. Oh, not so fast, mister, because you need to spend another $30 for that. Do you know what I mean? I mean, the computer has become an appliance at this point, and I don't feel like what you're talking about is definitely a problem, but I don't feel like this feeds into that problem. I mean, because if you're like, okay, so I'm a dad, and I shot a video of my kid at his, you know, Coral, whatever, and I want to make a movie, but I'm not like a movie maker. I just want to be able to put this in something that I can, you know, send to people. Okay, well, great. So we've got this thing, and it's iMovie, and it's free, and you can have it, and there you go. Oh, well, this is really interesting. I want to start to do like more stuff. I want to start to do better stuff. I want to start to do stuff that maybe, you know, is a bit more intricate. Okay, well, now spend $200. Do you know what I mean? I mean, there are like little things that you can kind of do with your computer that just come out of the box. And then if you actually want good software to do more, then you step up to something else, be that, you know, Final Cut or something that Adobe has to offer or something else. I mean,
so you have faith in consumers understanding that distinction. Because I guess that's where I get lost. I worry that consumers are going to see Apple as a leader. Well, Apple's giving away this great stuff. You know, why is this thing so expensive? Or why do I have to buy this to do that? Why doesn't, you know,
well,
Apple gives me iMovie. I mean, that's pretty good too, right? And that's free.
I think it's a difference between consumer, prosumer, and pro. I mean, right. I really think that's what it comes down to for most people.
Well, and I'm talking about consumers. I'm concerned on the consumer side. I don't think, you know, pros or, you know, corporations or some of the other verticals have this potential, you know, hang up. But I do see it in the consumer marketplace. And that's a big piece of Apple's marketplace. That's a big piece of the pie that Apple is sort of focusing on as of late.
So which developers as a class do you think are suffering? And I'm not saying.
I'll tell you, because I talked about it on my show.
Go for it. No, please do.
I really think if you're not, I don't think this affects the guy who has a great idea, has a one-hit wonder, and then sells it off to somebody. I don't think this affects what I call the garage developer or the part-time developer who, you know, develops an app as the secondary thing to his primary job. Where the people I'm most concerned about are all those great developers who have a small company with, you know, a handful or maybe more than a handful of employees, and, you know, it's been working really well for them, and now they're just, it's this, the pricing keeps getting lower and lower. And so they have to find new models. And I'm not saying we don't find new models. I'm saying I'm concerned about the current models we're seeing, and I'm concerned about the longevity. But again, I'm fully willing to accept that I don't get it, because I'm enamored or locked up in sort of the old way of doing things. And I never thought of myself as someone who would want to hang on to old models. I'm all for, you know, because I could be hypocritical in some ways, because I think the movie industry and the music industry and all those people need to find new models. So maybe that's just this is the process that we're going through. But I'm also saying I'm a little bit cautious about it. I like to look at it from all angles and go, and I know there's some developers that I've talked to, and you can go out, I even said this on my show too, go out and talk to some of your favorite developers that make some of your most favorite apps, and really ask them if they're concerned about this model. And I think you'll hear them say that they do have some concerns too. I'm not saying it's doomsday and that we're done, but it's certainly some conversations that we need to have, and something we need as a community to sort of figure out, you know, where this lands. And it was just an interesting move on Apple. I mean, Apple is definitely saying, you know, software is going to be cheaper and it's going to be free, and people look to Apple as a leader, but, you know, Apple has other revenue streams. Maybe that's another thing though too. Maybe app development doesn't become your only revenue stream. I don't know.
You know, I think that what Apple is doing isn't so harmful, as harmful as you think it might be. And I'm with you regarding the new app world order, mm-hmm. the pricing stuff. But I agree with what Ken was saying about how you want to, you're getting this computer for a thing and you want it to do some expected things right out of the box. And sure, it comes with text edit, but you know, wouldn't it be great if you could just use pages and numbers and all that stuff right out of the box, as it has been with iLife. And that's one of the things that Apple has the ability to do. And I think in the past, when Apple did that with iLife, there wasn't this big concern about, you know, oh, now consumers aren't going to know what good software is worth because Apple has put out good software for free. I think it's sort of understood that you bought this new expensive thing and you're getting some gimmies with it to kind of get you going.
Definitely wasn't free, right?
No, not at all. And giving you those extra those value add sort of features to your giant purchase, I think more reaffirms the good purchase than skews your perspective of what a good app should cost. I don't think that in the past anybody has said that they think everything should be free once they got iLife, et cetera. And this has been going on for a long, long time. I can think about, you know, Palm Pilots and things even before that, all that kind of stuff. You got some stuff, you know, when Microsoft bundled Solitaire on Windows, people didn't think, oh, well, all games should be free. But I understand in the context we're talking, regarding the fact that there has been this race to the bottom for a long time now with software in the App Store. It is another one of those things that can cause concern, but I think that it is not as concerning as the rest of the stuff that has been going on for a long time with the App Store. I don't think it's a huge deal.
The App Store is actually, that's a whole different thing. I'm with you, Adam, 100%. On the App Store. And I think that's been sort of I don't know if that was fear driven or if that was just bigger players trying to get smaller players out or what that was exactly. But that race to the bottom has been detrimental, I think, to a lot of app developers.
And
I'm terrible about it. I mean, I'll go $5 on an app I really want. If we get $7 or $9, then I'm like, you know, I'm like Scrooge McDuck over here. Yeah, I've got it, but you can't have it because it should be $5. Harder. Huh?
Yeah, you think harder about it. Whereas, you know, 5 years ago, if an app was $20, you're like, yeah, it's $20. I'm going to buy that. That's a deal.
Right.
No, I was Scrooge McDuck then too, man.
No. Oh, well, I mean, maybe not 5 years. I'm talking more on Mac apps, right?
Oh, okay.
I mean, you would drop $20
on a
good piece of Mac software, no problem. But even now with the Mac App Store, you see apps that are $5, $4.99, you know, $9.99. So you start getting in the $20 range for a Mac app, and you're like, whoa, that's really crazy. You mean I got to get a Photoshop level app for $50? I'm not paying that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You make an interesting point. That's
No, and we all do it. I mean, it's a shift, and I'm not saying that it's wrong or it's bad. I love it. It's great for me as a consumer. But at the same time, I do have to wonder, you know, how are we going to sustain good developers and development companies in this new model? And I just don't really know. I don't think we've found the solution yet. I think we'll get there. I think it's just growing pains. But at the same time, it's just every time you see something that again shifts prices towards lower or free, it's just another reminder that, hey, this shift is happening and we gotta pay attention to it.
Do you think that there's some kind of weird inverse effect happening based on the fact that there are so many free apps out there that totally suck?
Free? I have a whole different rant on that one, and a whole other complaint against Apple related to that, by the way.
Well, there are free apps that totally suck, and then there are the apps that are maybe like a dollar or two that also suck. And they really, like, when you, let's say you throw down a buck, you're like, oh, this one looks good. You throw down a buck and it sucks and you don't ever want to use it. It just leaves a really bad taste in your mouth and you think, man, I don't want to buy another app for a while because I just got screwed out of a buck, you know? Wow. And
that's another part of the whole app new world order.
It's another variable in the equation. Yeah. And in some ways it kind of leads to thinking, well, if this app is $20 and the ratings sort of support the fact that it is a good app, I think that higher priced apps like that maybe have more leverage, more buying ability, because it is more expensive and it indicates that there must be some kind of quality here because the developers are charging more. And I think that this is one of those things, another one of the variables in the whole situation, as part of all the growing pains that you're talking about. And I don't know if it's the same with you guys, but I have sort of come around to making more app purchases, thinking, you know, when I go to the grocery store, you know, I'll buy a veggie burger and it costs me, or a box of veggie burgers, it costs me $6 or whatever. You know, I don't really think too much about throwing down $6 for something that's gonna go away in 2 days.
Something that's life sustaining, like that you need.
It's life sustaining. I could eat ramen though. But you get what I'm saying. You know, it's $2 or $3, and geez, don't get me started on the price of a latte. I hate going to Starbucks. But you know, it's, I think growing pains is the best way to describe it. I think we're gonna get there because I don't think the ecosystem is gonna shut down. There's too much riding on it and there are too many people looking forward to making it work for the on the consumer end and on the provider developer end.
Oh. Yeah. Well, another part of this ecosystem that has to get fleshed out is the dark, shady corners of it too. And, you know, Apple's whole curated system is kind of falling down to a certain degree in my opinion there. And a lot of it is just because of the whole gold rush mentality around apps. So you have a lot of, you know, what I call app developer farms doing like cloneware or theftware and throwing stuff in on the App Store, trying to cause confusion with things like naming. I mean, we've seen all of these tactics and things like that. But what really frustrated me this week is during the keynote, I was really excited because when they showed that, you know, people using the iPad for different things video that I think we were talking about earlier, which was really powerful and really cool. There's one scene in there. And for those following along, I think it's about at an hour and 3 minutes and 43 seconds in, they show somebody doing stop motion stuff. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. I bet you that was stop motion. And I went back after Apple posted the video and I even went and froze the frame to like look at the app and go, was that I stop motion from Boinks? And it looked like it to me. And I tweeted out to the guys at Boinks, hey, that's cool. You guys were in the ad. And I got a tweet back saying, well, that actually wasn't our app. That was somebody who used our UI and, you know, basically copied our UI and made an app. And, oh, by the way, Apple also had that as a featured app of the day on the App Store, too.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Ouch. Really?
Yeah. And then I dug in, and not only did they steal Boinks' UI, they also have a color palette in there that looks exactly like the color palette from Paper by 53. They have the same exact camera icon that Apple uses for their camera app. So they even ripped off Apple. Now, in the Apple's case, I don't know if Apple makes that available as a standardized element, as a standard UI element. I didn't go look at Xcode. But it certainly is Apple's camera thing. And some people have asked, well, how come you're not calling out the company? And the reason I'm not calling out that one company, you know, and saying what the app is one, I don't want to give them any promotion. But two, they're not the only ones doing this. This is a larger problem in the App Store, and you see it a lot in all kinds of different ways. Like I said, you'll have developers who use the same icon or icons that are close to the same. Somebody posted a screenshot of the App Store of like all of the checklist or like reminders apps, and they almost have the same icon with a check mark. Yeah. So this is another symptom of the thing. And, I talked about this before we got the App Store, and I was worried about it when we got the Mac App Store too, in that because iOS devices are so popular, you know, this is our version of Windows software in the 90s. iOS software is our version of Windows software in the 90s, where you've got tons of choices. It's really great. You know, what Tim Cook said, 475,000, you know, iPad optimized apps, and we've got, you know, millions of iOS apps in general. It's great that we have all those apps, but you know what? 90% of it's just, like you're saying, Michael, junk. Right. And a lot of it, I think, is just because it's a new marketplace. And we've got to, again, these are all things that I'm concerned about. But it was really, you know, came to a head this week when I saw that. And it's like, oh, that really sucks. Yeah. You know, and then you start having the conversation, well, is it Apple's thing to deal with? You know, is this Apple's problem? Because they're promoting this thing. But, you know, it's probably the marketing company put together the video and they didn't know. And I don't know if it's anything egregious, but at the same time, you go, Apple is suing Samsung and they're suing Microsoft and all these people over user interface theft, right? So you'd think they'd be a little more sensitive to it as a company and want to be a little more on, you know, policing for it. But at the same time, you know, really this is something that probably Boinks has to deal with. They have to get their lawyers, and that's not going to happen because it's international. I mean, going after these guys is almost impossible. I mean, it's ridiculous to even probably try. Especially if you're a small company, which is why you'd want Apple to step in and sort of, you know, be the gatekeeper here. I don't know if it's realistic or not, but certainly we need to sort of say to Apple, I think, hey, it'd be great if you guys would pay a little more attention to this and not, you know, promote these apps in your own corporate videos and on your app pages.
That is pretty surprising. I thought they had a little more care go into those sorts of selections.
Well, do we know anything about how the film was made? I mean,
no, exactly. I mean, that's the point. I don't want to draw any conclusions to this other than point it out to people and say, you know, I mean, it's this is possible that's happening.
It's possible, and I don't know how the movie was made. I don't know if they hired an actor to pretend like he was a stop motion, you know, animator or whatever. Right. But if they were actually doing a real use case, it's possible that guy was using that piece of software.
Well, and we're talking about something that was probably less than a second in terms of, you know, on screen time in that case. The more shocking thing to me was when Boinks came back and said, oh, yeah, and they featured it, you know, on the App Store as an app of the day. And, you know, and it is. It's a free app versus the paid app that Boinks has.
Wow.
You know, and when Apple features an app, we know that does a lot to promote that app. And I went and looked at this developer's other apps, and they were mostly what you're talking about, Michael, mostly junkware, bunch of crud that was just garbage.
Yeah.
That's really unfortunate.
Can I just throw in a gratuitous plug here?
Mm-hmm.
App for Appler. This is the reason why I created Appler, because I've been so frustrated with with all the crapware. So getappler.com, you know, social app discovery. I'm trying my best to make the situation a little bit better for people to find good apps, including myself.
Yeah.
So. But yeah, it's an age old discussion. We'll have this discussion again soon, I'm sure.
Oh yeah,
probably next
and
week.
I think it'll all get. You know, I think we're gonna get there. You know, and it's, I have to constantly remind myself that these things take really a lot longer than you think. You know, growing up in an age where the technology itself, you know, in terms of the hardware and the software, advances so quickly, but just changing—we're talking about changing a whole way that an industry works in terms of, you know, the software industry and how we sell and distribute and stuff like that. That takes a lot longer. That process takes a lot longer to sort of figure out these new models. So
yeah, you got to wonder, you know, 20 years ago, you would never think that we would be having such an issue over, should we have to pay for things that we want or should we get them for free? You know, it's fun. Good times, right?
Yeah good times. Man.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know if we should really discuss it, cause we have a lot more to, we have to get out of here, but 703 was released and I guess there are some fixes for the accelerometer thing that we talked about. And
that's
iCloud,
probably the biggest deal in there.
iCloud, you know, keychain
messages,
as well.
The messages fix.
Yep.
Yes. Those are the two big biggies. plus keychain support, but that was just to go along with Mavericks.
Mm-hmm. And for what it's worth, if you're one of those people looking forward to a jailbreak, Muscle Nerd, one of the dev team guys, said that it was cool to go ahead and upgrade. Didn't look like they had fixed any of the holes they were using to exploit it. So, yep.
Is that a tethered or untethered jailbreak?
There's been no word on what the next jailbreak will be. I assume they're trying their hardest to have an untethered jailbreak.
So is the, well, I guess what I'm asking, is there currently untethered jailbreak for iOS 7?
There is no jailbreak for iOS 7 except
at all.
If you're saying it's safe to upgrade, then there must be, right? I would think you would be like,
yeah, I was confused where that was coming from.
Oh, I'm sorry. Safe to
Unless
upgrade.
He's just tired of it.
I should specify. Safe to upgrade if you are already on iOS 7. If you're on iOS 7 already and you're waiting for an iOS 7 jailbreak, iOS 7.03
okay, so
isn't
they're working on the jailbreak, and this isn't going to impede
their
them
work. Yes,
getting to a jailbreak.
Right.
Okay.
Good catch.
I've been
That's
in
important.
The jailbreak community, so yeah. That makes it clear. Okay.
That's important.
Cool. That's where you confused me, because I didn't think there was a jailbreak for 7. So that's why I was asking.
Yeah, there is not, but hopefully soon. Okay. So, Ken, I forgot to mention that we do picks. I don't know if you remember that. I'll have the other guys go first so you can get one together. So with that, Adam, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I'm going to pick, I'm trying to find it here. Abby Card Scanner.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, it's called Abby Business Card Reader. Okay. And what it is it's a little app that you can take a business card and scan it with. And Abby, people might know, if you own like a Fujitsu, like a ScanSnap or something like that, they're the ones, they do really cool OCR software. I think they do the software where you can, take a document, scan it in and convert it, say, to a Word file or to a an Excel file directly. And so I had a while back been wanting, I have a ton of business cards that I've gotten at different conferences and stuff like that. And I don't relish the idea of sort of putting them into my contacts database. And I could use my ScanSnap for that, but the software's never been really that great for me. It's just something I typically don't do. And I thought, well, it'd be much easier if I was just at, the trade show, someone hands me their card, if I could just snap it with my iPhone and get it into my contacts, get that data into my contacts. And that's what this does. And it does it actually really well. It's nice because you can save, it has its own internal database where you can save your card images and the data into the app itself, but then you can also easily have it also save the data into a contact record in the contacts app. And it's surprisingly accurate for most cards. It seems to be a pretty good one. I tried a couple different, there were some free ones, there were a little less expensive ones. I want to say this one was...
It's $5.
$5, yeah. Which, going back to our conversation earlier, probably should be a lot more. A lot of the free ones that I tried out, or even the 99-cent lower cost ones, just did not work very well at all. And I recognize the name Abby from some of their other software, so I know that they do good stuff in terms of the OCR, and it proved out with this app. So if you're looking for a little, way to get physical business cards data into your contacts database, this one's a great one, especially if you're going to be mobile. So Abby, ABBY, business card scanner or reader.
Cool. It's actually ABBYY.
Oh, two Ys.
Yeah, which is why it was hard to find, but yeah.
Yeah, Abby, business card reader.
Cool. Jeff, what is your pick this week?
My pick... actually didn't come out until we started recording the show.
Oh, cool.
Yes. So my pick is Tweetbot 3 for the iPhone.
Yay, it's out.
Yes, it came out, just while we were recording.
Is that a free update?
No. So it's okay. $2.99.
Oh, I'm not paying for that. That's too much money.
Here we go.
And yes, I paid for it as soon as it hit the App Store during the show. So it's been totally updated for iOS 7. I really like how the interface looks. I think they did a great job of adopting the iOS 7 style without looking like cartoons or just flat I think it's really well done. So it does background content fetching, which is very nice. And it'll do Wi-Fi streaming, which means if you're on a Wi-Fi network with internet access, it will just stream the content from Twitter into your timeline for you instead of having to do the regular updates. So that's pretty cool. Those are like a couple of the big things, but it's totally worth the $3.
Oh man. So what was I saying earlier about the App Store and Apple's problems?
Yeah, I didn't know that it was out. I've been waiting for the update. I knew it was coming.
So I just, because Jeff, I want to download it, right? So I went on the App Store app on my iPhone and I just typed Tweetbot, right?
And mm-hmm.
Three results, and not a single of them, one of them is the actual Tweetbot app. And as a matter of fact, one of them is Tweetbot with a capital T and a capital B by Kyoku Hacker.
Yeah,
Kyoku Hacker.
$2.99.
I've seen that.
Yeah, see, that's just crap. That shouldn't happen. Yeah.
See, I was actually going to ask you if that's what you were talking about.
No.
Because I was doing the same thing that you were doing.
TapBots. You want the TapBots one.
All right. Wow, even asking for it by name doesn't do it for you. That is bogus. No. That is bogus.
That's, you know, yeah. I was using Apple Search as part of my search on Appler for a while, and after a while it was just dumb. I was doing better off with the search that I was doing on Appler. So there's some weird gaming going on the App Store.
Did you get it through iTunes, Jeff? Because it's not coming up on my iPhone, so maybe it's not quite updated yet.
Wow. Okay. What I had to do was I found it through iTunes. And since I didn't want to actually do the transaction on my Mac, I then just emailed myself the link and bought it right on my iPhone.
Yeah. It usually takes them a little, for whatever reason I've noticed, it takes a little while longer for, I think, the iOS devices to update, which is weird because you'd think it'd be coming from the same database, but apparently not. I'll find the link. Thank you.
You have the link now.
Yeah, I just threw it in the. I threw mine in the Skype, but Jeff put his in there too. If you're signed into Appler, you can actually hit the get this app and hit send me a link, and so then you can get it right on your phone.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a neat little tip. All right, so Tweetbot 3, and I totally just bought it. I spent money on a good app.
All right, so that's $6 that have been spent on this app that we know of so far during the show.
Yeah, let's get more. Let's raise money for TapBots. That's not.
Remember, we won't interrupt your favorite NPR programs if you go ahead and buy TapBots now. Or Tweetbot. And we don't want to be here. We'd like to be someplace else. Please call in. Make a donation.
We'll give you a free tote, too. And don't forget.
Exactly. Or a DVD of Downton Abbey.
There you go. All right, Ken, you have a pick this week?
No. I apologize. I don't. Here's the thing. I've actually been so at home working on stuff, like so working on my Mac lately. I mean, I can give you two picks, but they're not iOS picks. One of the people who sort of like, you know, Pixelmator, what is it, $20? I don't know. I'm using Pixelmator constantly now, and I love it. And it's not as confusing as Adobe, whatever it was. Photoshop, Illustrator, whatever one that was. And it's also not nearly as expensive. It's a wonderful thing. And I have to just sort of to pile on to the ad that you were doing earlier. I'm using my transporter on a daily basis now for this new thing that I'm working on, which I guess I could make my iOS pick, but the problem is that's self-serving.
You could do that. Yeah. I've been self-serving with Appler.
with Appler? I could do that with Apple. That's true.
No. Michael's been self-serving, so he's giving you permission to be self-serving.
Okay. Yes. All right. So I've launched a thing on Newsstand called iChart, EYE chart, iChart, putting Apple and tech news in focus is what it says. And it's basically the work that I'm doing for macOS Ken, but in sort of, presented as a sort of a magazine or newsletter or something along those lines. With pictures and links, and you can hold on to it. And if we're mentioning a YouTube video, then the YouTube video's in there, like the last page of today's edition. Well, today, Thursday, whenever that was, as people hear it now, the 24th. It's got links to all five of the, it plays right in the magazine, all five of the videos that Apple put up from this past Tuesday. The hope is that it's actually going to, well, first of all, that people will actually be able to go in. A lot of people are complaining that I don't do good show notes. And they're right, I don't, except now you can have notes for every show through macOS Ken. Really, the hope, though, is other people are going to discover it and sort of take it that way. So, yeah, that's that. And so that's my iOS pick, I guess. All news to now, there's a 2-week free trial. It's $4.99 a month. All proceeds go to me.
Cool.
Now, as well they should.
You said it's iChart?
iChart. EYE iChart.
One word?
Magazine. No, two words.
Oh, iChart space magazine?
I space. Really? This is that tough? I space chart space magazine.
Gotcha. Well,
to be fair, Michael's probably stoned.
Well, it could be that.
Oh, there it is.
There it is.
Ta-da.
There you go.
I have that dumb camel case way of spelling things for everything, and it screws me up all the time. But yeah, there we go. So iChart, and it's, yeah, like Ken said.
That's that. So yeah, give it a try and see what you think. And hopefully, you know, a year from now, we're talking about something completely different. Right now, it's pretty much the stuff that's being produced for the show. But, you know, if I can add extra content here and extra content there, hopefully one day you're looking at something that's even a bigger resource than it is right now. Although right now I'm kind of happy with how it is going. So
and
check
it
out.
And it looks really nice.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Oh, and props to Julie Keel. She's actually doing a large part of the production of it for me. I write the script, and I came up with the initial design. She helped tweak it some, and then so I write the script. I send that off to her. She sends it back to me. I do some final tweaking, and then I do the uploading and encoding and whatever to make it a magazine thing. But she's been just wonderful in getting it off the ground. If I hadn't had her help me do that, then I would still be talking about it as an idea as opposed to it actually being a thing that people can see. So there we go.
Cool. So my pick this week, I don't know if I did it before, but I'm going to do it again because I've been using it a lot. It's PadMapper. And I know that PadMapper for a while, initially and now again, that's why I'm picking it. It would take, it's for apartment hunting. It would pool a bunch of listings from tons of different places, including Craigslist, which was the big deal, including, let's see here, Padlister, Apartments.com, Realtor.com, Rent.com, a whole bunch of other places. And Craigslist gets stingy about their data, and so they couldn't use Craigslist data for a long time. They can now, and they have been able to for a while again, but it's good that they can do that because it really creates an awesome experience for finding a place. So the iOS app is my pick, and it's great because you just center on an area. I'm actually moving out to San Luis Obispo, and you just center on the area you want to go. And you go into the filters and you say how much you want to, the minimum rent, the maximum rent, number of bedrooms, number of bathrooms, show full-term leases. If you want to make sure cats are allowed, make sure that there are photos in it, all this good stuff. And it really helps you wade through all of the listings and actually figure out a good place to start when you're looking for a place, especially if it's a place that's far off from where you are currently, which is what I'm dealing with. And so I'm very grateful to have PadMapper, and it's a free app. So, and the website is also free and, works even better, and you can collaborate with people. You can invite people to your list of favorites. So if you're moving with someone else, it's great for that too. So PadMapper, it's free and it's super cool. So with that, you can find all of our picks and the show notes at wehavecommunicators.com. Review the show in iTunes. We always love that. That helps us get more visibility. Feedback at wehavecommunicators.com is the email address. You can email us questions, comments, feedback, all that good stuff. audio comments if you want. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. Don't forget the transporter offer. It's $50 off any of the transporter models. And I think that all of us are using transporters, so that's cool. Filetransporter.com for that. Jeff Gamet is at the Mac Observer, MacObserver.com, at Jay Gamet on Twitter. Maybe he'll buy the MacObserver.com soon.
Maybe I will.
Or maybe I will.
Or maybe you will.
Yeah. Zazzle.com/Jay Gamet is where you can find stuff that he's put on to merchandise, including the We Have Communicators mug. And
everything tastes better in that mug. You need two.
This is true. Yeah. Ken Ray, he does the Mac OS Ken podcast, macosken.com, the Mission Log podcast. Where do you find that? Missionlog.com?
Missionlogpodcast.com.
Missionlogpodcast.com. He's at Mac OS Ken on Twitter. And you said there was going to be something else you wanted to mention?
Oh, just the iChart thing that I mentioned a minute ago.
Oh.
iChartMag.com, or it's three words. New Word Chart, New Word Magazine, if you want to find it in the App Store.
Cool. And thanks for being here, Ken. It's always great
thanks
to have
for,
you.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And Adam Christensen's at the MacCast, MacCast.com, at MacCast on Twitter, and member.maccast.com is the member version of the show.
Yep.
And I'm guessing there's going to be something about upgrading to Mavericks in that, right?
There already is a show about prepping to upgrade to Mavericks out. That was the last one that I did. And probably the next one is going to be either Mavericks or probably iWork tips. We'll see. I'm trying to decide which to do. So if you are a member and have an opinion, shoot me an email. Maybe that'll influence my decision. But.
There you go. I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter, at GetAppler on Twitter, and GetAppler.com for the Applers that I've already talked too much about. So with that, we'll see you next time on We Have Communicators.
An iPod. An iPod. An iPod. An iPod. A phone. A phone. A phone. An iPod. An iPod. An iPod. An iPod. A phone. A phone. A phone. And an internet communicator. How are we going to communicate this? The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No. Yuck. No. Yuck, yuck, no. Who wants a stylus? You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Yuck, yuck. Yuck, yuck, no. Yuck, 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 no. Yuck, no. Yuck, yuck, no. No, 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 no. You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. We're going to use the best pointing device in the world. We're going to use a pointing device that we're all born with. We're born with 10 of them. We're going to use our fingers. Our fingers. Our fingers. Our fingers. Our fingers. Yuck. Our fingers. Yuck. Communicator.
iPod. A phone. Are you getting it? An iPod. A phone. An iPod. A phone. An internet communicator.